The next case of the morning and the last case is number 041418, Transact Technologies Incorporated against OneSource WorldSight Corporation.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Ann Auten for the appellant, Transact Technologies. Your Honors, we're here today because John Wong violated a hard-fought settlement agreement that was incorporated into an order of the Court of Magistrate Bovrick. And that order clearly and unequivocally directed Mr. Wong to turn over certain collateral to Transact free and clear of any liens, claims, or encumbrances before February 12, 2003. And Mr. Wong violated that order, and he should have been held in contempt. Now, Your Honors, I recognize that the standard of review on this appeal is abuse of discretion and that the magistrate had discretion in ruling on Transact's motion. But having said that, it was incumbent on Magistrate Bovrick to actually exercise that discretion. And that is what he didn't do, because he failed to resolve a material issue of fact as to when it was that Mr. Wong refused to turn over this collateral free and clear of any liens. And I'll get into that in a little more detail in a few moments, Your Honor. But first, I also want to address the issue of jurisdiction. In their brief, appellees take the position that there was no final order entered by the magistrate and that there is no jurisdiction in this court. Your Honors, that position is just wrong. When Transact initiated its proceedings, its contempt proceedings, before the magistrate, it initiated post-judgment proceedings. And the rule is that when an order finally disposes of the issues in post-judgment proceedings, that is a final and appealable order. And that's what happened in this case. At the last hearing on the motion on January 21st, the magistrate basically said at the end of the hearing, this matter is over, period. It was done. There was nothing else that the magistrate was willing to hear. To his mind, he had resolved the issues that were before him. And at that point, he entered an order saying the motion was denied for the reasons stated in open court. There was nothing left in the district court, and that was a final and appealable order. Now, as to the merits of this matter, the problem with what happened in the district court is that the magistrate never resolved this factual issue. And if you look at the transcripts of the various hearings that took place before the magistrate, the majority of the time, frankly, was spent back and forth. Mr. Wong would say, Mr. Higgins, Transact's agent, never tried to get this collateral until May or June. Later, Mr. Wong, I think, said, Mr. Higgins never tried to get the collateral until April. Mr. Higgins' affidavit showed that he, in fact, went to pick up the collateral just a few days after the order
was entered.
What
did the order say? What did the consent, what did the judgment say?
The underlying judgment, Your Honor,
no.
Said that he was to turn over, in fact, deliver, the words are deliver, the collateral free and clear of any liens.
So your guy had really no obligation under that order to go to anybody's premises and pick up anything. Am I correct?
That's exactly right, Your Honor, and that's part of our point, is that he was obligated to deliver it. It was a clear and unequivocal order. I think the one
was
thing
Mr.
that's...
Was Mr. Wang ever in Chicago?
No, Your Honor. He's in California.
And think about having come to Chicago?
For the hearing, Your Honor? The magistrate permitted him to appear by telephone for the hearings.
Unsworn,
that's correct. And that was part of the problem. I mean, basically when the magistrate cut off all further debate on this issue, he was in the process of scheduling a further hearing. I believe he was going to let Mr. Wong appear by telephone, but certainly it was my intention to at least have Mr. Higgins available by telephone too, because Mr. Wong was making a lot of claims that really had to be responded to. To get back to this issue of this factual issue, I just want to make it clear that here's why it matters and why that issue should have been decided. Because if you credit Transact's position and what Mr. Higgins says, then before the ink was even dry on Magistrate Bovrick's order, and really just a few days after Mr. Wong himself signed that order saying he was going to turn over this collateral, Mr. Wong turned around and thumbed his nose at it and refused to do so. So at that point, if you credit Transact's account, no reasonable person in Magistrate Bovrick's position could have concluded anything but that Mr. Wong was in contempt of his order.
What's Wang's position with First Source?
I'm sorry, say
this
again?
What's Wang's position with
Wang,
First Source?
He's a chairman, Your Honor. He was a chairman, and in addition, again, Mr. Wang himself signed this order that It doesn't direct OneSource to deliver the collateral. It actually says Mr. Wong as agent for OneSource. He specifically was named in the order as the person that was ordered to deliver this collateral. So now, he specifically was told.
At the time, give me the first date when there was some indication that I guess February sort of rings in my mind, but what went on in February that was at the time when he was supposed to deliver it? It dragged on until November or something, but what was under order in February? What should have happened?
He should have delivered the collateral, Your Honor, in February. The order actually states February 12th. The order was entered because it wasn't entered right away, but it was entered February 14th. Mr. Wong admitted in the record at one of the hearings that he understood it was his responsibility at least to pay for the storage charges up through February 15th.
At that time, I got sort of the impression that maybe there weren't really storage charges pending.
Well, that is what Mr. Wong tried to say, but again, the factual...
His neighbor or something?
The factual problem is that what our client's agent says is that when he went at that time, Mr. Wong said, I'm not giving you anything. Give me a check for the storage charges. So there was some confusion. After that time, I think the equipment was put in storage and somehow moved around to different storage locations, and it then became a problem of us trying to figure out where it was. When I became involved, Mr. Wong, we really didn't have an option to just pay the storage charges because Mr. Wong insisted that he would not release it until he executed a release saying that he had fulfilled his obligations.
But the way Mr. Wong describes it, at least in whatever's in the brief here, is he says, well, I did this and I was going to do that and they didn't do this. Obviously, there's a dispute in the facts of what who did what and who was supposed to do what. Isn't that the part of the problem here?
No, I don't believe, Your Honor, that there's a dispute as to who was supposed to do what.
Well, not who, but what happened and why they didn't.
Yes. The order itself is clear and unequivocal, but there is a factual dispute, and I think there was a lot of confusion in the record as to what happened. And that's the issue that we think the magistrate should have at least resolved before disposing of this motion, because he never sat down and resolved what happened or why it is that this order was not complied with, because I think it's undisputed that the order was not complied with.
You did talk about mitigation, which I guess means that the judge at least thought your client should have paid the storage, gotten the equipment, and then fought with Wang about paying for it. Is that what mitigation meant in his mind?
That's right, Your Honor. And I believe there are a few things wrong with the idea of resolving this issue just on based on mitigation without resolving that disputed factual issue. The first thing is, just as a general principle, mitigation generally as a concept can reduce compensatory damages, but it's not an absolute bar to recovery.
Do you know of any authority that mitigation is a viable doctrine in the context of contempt?
Well,
neither you nor your opponents cite any cases to it. Magistrate judge did.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that was the problem we had, is that I wasn't able to identify any cases in which mitigation was actually raised as an issue in the context of contempt. And I think the Shackman case that we cite shows that, you know, to the extent mitigation goes to compensatory damages and attorney's fees are two different things in the context of a contempt proceeding, and that in that case, the court did not award any damages, but it was still proper for the court to award attorney's fees for bringing the motion.
Mitigation allows the contemnor to profit from his own misdeed, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, the whole idea is you got a judgment hanging over your head, and until you comply with the court's order, it's costing you big time. And that's allowed to
right,
hold
it
against the rest of the world to mitigate your contempt of the court's order.
I think I think part of the problem is that the magistrate put the burden of mitigation on Transact, and I think, you know, if you look at what might have happened, had the had Transact just paid the charges and come in then, we still would have been in court seeking
but,
contempt.
All of that aside, why'd you wait so long to bring the contempt action?
Your Honor, I believe what happened is that it didn't come to my attention, unfortunately, for several months. I wasn't aware at the time that he had refused to turn over the equipment in February. I apologize to say I was actually on leave from the office at the time. When my client called me and said, okay, I've got someone to pick it up, let's try to pick it up again, Mr. Wong refused to turn it over. At that time, I became aware of this situation in February and immediately went into court saying, give us the stuff, let's get the stuff turned over and figure out how we can resolve this dispute. Thank you. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal if I have any. Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from Mr. LeRoux.
Good morning. Norman Larum on behalf of the appellees. May it please the court. I would like to first address the substantive area of contempt and then move to the jurisdictional issue. The order in question was entered sometime after February 12, 2003. It was docketed on March 3, 2003. It was signed by the magistrate on February 14. And the operative provision, at least one of the operative provisions, states as follows. The defendant, One Source WorldSite, and John Wang was dismissed in the underlying case for lack of personal jurisdiction, so Mr. Wang was not a defendant in the underlying case. The defendant, which is a defunct corporation, and Michael Reagan, chairman of Transact, was the CEO of One Source WorldSite. So in effect, he was almost suing himself. Through its agent, John Wang, shall turn over all the collateral free and clear of any liens, claims, or encumbrances to an agent for the plaintiff on or before February 12, 2003, or such other date as the parties expressly agree to in writing. There was never any written modification of this agreement. This particular settlement agreement, which was drafted by counsel for the plaintiff and not by the magistrate himself, is not clear and it's not unequivocal with respect to the details which are sought to be enforced with the motion for a rule to show cause, which gives rise to this appeal. The motion for rule to show cause talks about delivery, but not specifically where. Actually, the thrust of the motion was really for attorney's fees, and that was the essence of the dispute in the case below. Now on appeal, all of a sudden, we have a focus on the word delivery. Where should Mr. Wang have delivered this material? It's not clear. The testimony from Mr. Wang, taken by the magistrate on three different occasions at length, was that he had delivered all the material, all the collateral, to specific locations, had notified the plaintiff of those locations, and there was conflicting testimony as to when the plaintiff sent Mr. Higgins to the locations. And the dispute was not about their availability, it was about the storage fees. It was delivered without
liens or encumbrances, right?
And Mr. Wang testified that it was his view, it was his understanding that his obligation was all the way up to February 12, 2003, which he had paid. In fact, these materials, and he testified to this, this collateral was in storage for 10 months during the pendency of this lawsuit, ready for pickup. So the dispute was between February 12 on a going-forward basis. That was the dispute, February 12.
What was the barrier in delivering this equipment after February 12?
The equipment had been delivered, Your Honor.
Okay, that's what's perplexing. It's delivered somewhere where it's accruing storage. Is that designated delivery by either party? You can deliver it wherever you want to?
The order says shall turn over.
Yeah.
It doesn't say deliver.
It says deliver someplace.
Well, it says shall turn over in paragraph B.
Which is that means they could turn it upside down.
But the clear intent, as the magistrate found, page 26, I think, of the appendix, he made the finding. It's page 26 of the appendix. The magistrate says, I know that there are issues with these individual computers, their worth and claims, storage claims. That can't be part of the show cause order. He's made them available. They're out there, and he told you where they are, and that's it. With respect to the Sun server, he found that it had been put in a place ready for pickup, and in fact, it was picked up. The rest
storage,
of this...
Was there a storage fee on that, too?
I don't believe so.
So that was... Okay.
And so the only issue on the motion to reconsider was for attorney's fees. That was the only issue on the motion to reconsider. There was an issue on the 18 or 20 personal computers, which are still in storage.
Not worth much, I suppose.
Not worth much, but they're still there. And that's the barrier or the reason why they supposedly weren't picked up. There was some testimony that at one point the storage fee was under $1,000. At one point it was under $1,800. The mitigation comes into play this way. The magistrate clearly found that there was no equivocal directive in this judgment order, and he found there was no contempt after taking the testimony. The mitigation comes into play because this is, in essence, an order designed to assist in the satisfaction of a judgment, and the plaintiff has an obligation to mitigate in the satisfaction of that judgment. The collateral is available. The most valuable collateral was, in fact, picked up. There's still some left. The order at page 3, paragraph I, basically provides that the plaintiff may dispose of the collateral at a public or private sale and then come back for more post-judgment remedies. Well, it's a typical judgment order type provision where the creditor may come back to enforce its rights in front of the court that entered the order. That's how the mitigation of damages comes in, because a creditor has an obligation to mitigate its damages in the satisfaction of any judgment anywhere. I don't think it's necessarily relevant to the contempt, but the magistrate made a finding that Mr. Wang fulfilled his obligations by turning over the collateral to the defendant, and that and basically there was an agreement between the parties, because Mr. Higgins did show up at a specific place and was willing to pick up the collateral. In fact, they did pick up the most valuable collateral. I don't think there was ever a dispute as to where the collateral needed to be deposited for pickup. The only dispute was about the February 12 date, and the only dispute was about attorney's fees in bringing the motion.
And the attorney's fees dispute was resolved?
The magistrate denied the motion.
No attorney's fees.
No attorney's fees, right? Because he did not find contemptuous conduct under this order, because it's not clear and it's not equivocal, and he found that Mr. Wang satisfied his obligation under it. I don't believe, and this is the last point, I think the brief is clear, there's any jurisdiction for this court. An order denying a motion for a rule to show cause to be held in contempt in and of itself is interlocutory. The only way that order is reviewed by an appellate court is if the underlying order is final and appealable. The underlying order here is not, because the parties have not completed all the tasks that are contemplated by this order. In the district court, in this case the magistrate, still has jurisdiction over disputes that have not yet been resolved or still could arise under these tasks. There's still collateral out there available for pickup. And if a dispute does arise between the parties as to the pickup of that collateral, no matter how valuable it may be, then the magistrate still has jurisdiction over those issues.
Even though he thought it was over?
Well, that's a question of interpretation. He said the motion to reconsider was over simply because he makes a comment, period, I don't want to hear this anymore, this is the fifth time you've come to me. That doesn't make the underlying order a final and appealable order. That comment alone. The order itself reserves jurisdiction with the magistrate for all the tasks that are contemplated to be finished by this order. And those tasks are not done, because theoretically, tomorrow we could have another dispute about the collateral in California, and the parties or the plaintiff could be back in court in front of this magistrate trying to enforce this order.
Of course, after you said he retains jurisdiction, he says, and number five, this order is a final order.
Well, doesn't say appealable.
And it doesn't
make it a, and it doesn't make it a final order under the law, because the order in substance clearly contemplates further action by the parties and by the court in the event disputes arise from the tasks that are contemplated by this order. And it clearly contemplates post-judgment remedies with respect to the collateral, and the last of the collateral, which is covered by UCC, has not yet been retrieved or picked up. There's been no satisfaction of judgment entered. Therefore, it's still possible that the magistrate will see this order and see another dispute under this order in the future. For those reasons, I'm sorry, I went over a couple seconds. For those reasons, I would ask the court to affirm the order entered by the magistrate.
Thank you, sir. We'll make that a full minute.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors. Then just quickly, Your Honors, if you look at page 4 of our appendix, which is the order, the actual order that was entered, and I believe counsel was reading from the wrong part of the order, paragraph 3 says, plaintiff is entitled to possession of the collateral, and John Wong, as agent for the defendant, shall deliver or cause to be delivered all of the collateral free and clear of any liens, claims, or encumbrances to the plaintiff on or before February 12, 2003, or such other date as the parties expressly agree to in writing. That order is clear and unequivocal. There is no evidence in this record that there was any impediment to John Wong delivering the collateral free and clear of any liens, claims, or encumbrances by February 12th. In fact, we made it easy for him. Our client sent their agent to actually go to where he was, and then he refused to turn it over without payment of storage costs. And
What was the date that your agent showed up?
February 15th. The order was actually entered on February 14th. In the record again, Mr. Wong admitted he was liable for storage causes through February 15th. He stated that specifically. And the magistrate was right in the middle of setting a hearing on the fact dispute when he decided this motion based solely on his conclusion that there was a failure to mitigate damages. That was the basis of his decision, and that was an abuse of discretion. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We have finished this morning's call, and so the court will now rise until 9:30 next week, or Tuesday of next week.